You're listening to the Gal for All Seasons with the one and only Coupon, NDB Media Sports.
Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Gal for All Seasons podcast featuring your host, the Gal for All Seasons, Taryn the Coop Cooper. That's me. Here on the NDB Media Sports Network on Blog Talk Radio. Well, today is August 1st, and what can I tell you? I've actually been on the air for 6 months. My first show was the first Wednesday in February. So, hey, yay me, I guess. Right now we're in some interesting times. We have football camp that just opened. The baseball trade deadline is come and gone. So, we're getting into the nitty-gritty of the season right here. And hockey season is right around the corner. Who thought, right? I mean, it just seems like yesterday that the LA Kings were hoisting the Stanley Cup, and then, you know, in between all that, the Mets celebrated their franchise's first no-hitter, well before that. I mean, the Tim Tebow news that he was coming to the Jets, it's really unbelievable. But now you get to see really the first hand of the madness that my life is centered around sports, hopefully in the upcoming months. But tonight's show, you're in for a treat. I have a friend of the show and a big Mets, Jets, and Rangers fan like myself, John Metrodamus Coppinger. Let me bring him in here. And that didn't work. Try that again. Hey, Metrodamus, you with me?
Group, are you there? Can you hear me?
So I take it that you are at Strawberries right now.
I am right at the bar stool right here, and I am on a couple of beers, so this should be interesting.
I find that my best podcasts are when I'm drunk. I didn't drink today, though, so I don't know. We'll see where this goes.
I'll have to do the drinking for both of us, then.
That's great. Well, you know what? I've always wanted to do a live show from Strawberry, so I'd be curious to see how this all pans out. Maybe they'll let me do it sometime.
Well, this is by no means official. I'm not at a special table or anything. I'm just at the bar stool.
Right.
Just finishing up my second blue moon. So, and can I lead off by saying one thing? We're watching the Olympics here on all of these screens here, and I'm watching the two Chinese ladies play table tennis, or as I like to call it, ping pong.
Right.
And can I say that these ladies are so amazing at what they do, and I got to say that watching them hit this little ball at amazing speeds with this little tennis paddle, I got to tell you that Jason Bay has no more excuse anymore. If they can do it, there's no reason that Jason Bay can't hit a baseball. They say hitting a baseball is the toughest thing to do in sports. No. I'm watching these two women hit ping pong balls at these crazy speeds, 150 miles an hour, and I'm like, Jason Bay, what are you doing? Come on. Take a look at what these girls are doing. And you're stealing money. Come on.
Right. Well, you know, you bring up an interesting segue with Jason Bay, because I was going to ask you your opinion, but recently the Twitter feed just blew up that there was some kind of, bad contract swap talk between the Mets and the Marlins, which, I mean, that's a setup right there. That's just comedy in its highest form. Jason Bay and Heath Bell, right? I mean... What do you make of that, and why would they want to do a trade like that? Who would be a winner in a trade like that?
I don't think there are any winners. I think it's like war. There's no winners in a deal like that. I heard that. I saw Heath Bell's name and Jason Bay's name just fly across the Twitter feed, and I'm just thinking, did Heath Bell eat Jason Bay? I don't think you can win in a deal like that, because Jason Bay's not hitting. But he's trying, and that seems to be the thing you have to say. Every time we talk about Jason Bay, you have to end the conversation with, oh, he's trying.
Right.
Not for the reader.
You basically have the most expensive paperweight in Major League Baseball. So, again, I don't know who wins. I think the Mets would win that deal if only they would get John Buck in the deal. So they they pay a little extra money. They get the catcher that they need, whether he back up Tolley or he's the starter. I don't really care at that point. but I think the Mets win that deal slightly. If you put a gun to my head and said, okay, yeah, I would take a winner, I would say the Mets would kind of win that deal, but they're winning is a relative term at this point.
Right. Right. Yeah, I mean, it's really kind of a moot point to discuss since obviously the deal didn't go through. But I mean, Jason Bay is clearly he's really interesting because as much as you know the Bluebirds come out at Citi Field behind him, and that you know he's just he's a drain on the payroll, he's a drain on the lineup. He's still kind of a likable guy. He hustles. Like you said, the theme is that he tries very hard. But, I mean, to have him fall off the cliff like he has, and not just this season, I mean, in his three total seasons with the Mets, he is a shadow of the Jason Bay that we thought we would be getting, or at least a fraction of what we thought we'd be getting.
And I wish I knew what the issue was. At least with guys like Roberto Alomar, or Keith Hernandez when he went to Cleveland, as he's been talking about lately.
Right.
You could attribute that to age. Jason Bay was 31 when he fell off the cliff. He had concussion issues with the Mets, but it's not like he was doing a whole lot for the team before that.
Right.
So I can't explain it. I'm at a loss for words. And that's why you got to just feel a little bit for the guy. Because after 3 years, what's the point of booing him at this point? You go through 2.5 years of this, and it's like, okay, well, booing him isn't going to do. They say, oh, well, be positive, and it'll be all right, and positivity goes a long way. I feel like we've tried everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like Jason Bay has tried everything. So what do you do at this point? You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, it's really just a quandary. I'm actually formulating something going over his stats since he was a rookie, basically. And it's just really sad to see this because, you're expecting a little bit of decline in production, as you say, as players get older. But, you know, in the case of Robbie Alomar and Keith Hernandez, there were age issues going there. And Jason Bay is still relatively young, so who the hell knows? It's just crazy. But you know, besides the talk of a crazy trade of just a bad contract swap between the Mets and the Marlins, that obviously it didn't happen, and it's just hitting the news wires now. You know, yesterday we saw the trade deadline come and go. From many Mets fans' point of view, it's just any given Tuesday. You wrote a magnificent piece on the deadline called "Deadlines Are for Suckers Anyway," and I had to agree that there wasn't much the Mets could do that wouldn't immediately take away from someplace else. You know what I mean? So like, one of the things that drove me crazy were people that were clamoring for Daniel Murphy for a middle reliever. And I'm like, you people are crazy because he's worth so much more than a middle reliever. And to lose, either you're going to get a middle reliever who's going to give us headaches late in the game, or you're going to have Daniel Murphy that's going to give you consistent production. But, I mean, what were your thoughts? Maybe you can walk us through what you wrote about that last night.
Well, basically, it's all about maximizing value. It's just like any other year. You want to take your assets, and if you flip them into something else, you want to maximize the value that you have. You want to get them. If you want to trade somebody, you trade somebody at their peak. Scott Harrison's a perfect example. Scott Harrison will probably not have any more value than he has right now. The problem with Scott Harrison is there's no market for him. What he does is very specific. He hits left-handers. He's a defensive liability. There's not a big market for that. Now, Tim Burdick, I think you could have got something for, because there's always a market for left-handed relievers, and you had a couple of teams that were looking for left-handed relievers. The Anaheim Angels, for example, let Scott Downs go on the DL. They were looking for a left-handed reliever. The Red Sox wound up trading for Craig Breslow. So you knew that they needed a left-handed reliever. So I think that you could have created a market for Tim Burdick. But the problem is you're not going to get a Zach Wheeler again like you got for Carlos Beltran. You're not going to get all that much. So the complaint about that is minor. And with Daniel Murphy, you bring up Daniel Murphy. I think that's a great point. You're not going to if you want to maximize Daniel Murphy's trade value, you're not going to do it for a middle reliever. Because as everybody says, and as everybody knows, middle relievers are a very volatile commodity. You can trade. Look at Ramon Ramirez. They got Ramon Ramirez in the Angel Pagan trade, where they got Torres and Ramon Ramirez. And we all thought that was a great trade. I still think that's a great trade. Philosophically, I think that's a great trade. But then Ramon Ramirez comes here, and he's not having a good year. So what do you do? And you don't want to get rid of a guy like Daniel Murphy, who can hit as long as it can hit, as the day is long, and then get a middle reliever who could all of a sudden fall off a cliff.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And that's something that, you know, people will point to the fact that Daniel Murphy, you know, hits a lot of doubles and he gets on base a lot, and, you know, they're just like, you know, show me the end result. But he's on pace for, you know, like a 75 RBI season. This is a guy who doesn't hit a lot of home runs, but he's hitting in a lot of situational positions. And that's something that really can't be trained. So Daniel Murphy is a guy that you'd want to hold on to, as you say, to maximize the value. So I kind of have to applaud Sandy Alderson at this point for not making a deal for the sake of making a deal.
Right. You need 30 feet around you when you play. I agree with you, definitely. And the other thing with Daniel Murphy is that he hasn't been a liability defensively. I thought if anybody would be a liability defensively in that middle infield, there would be Daniel Murphy. But Daniel Murphy has really done a good job and worked hard to be a better defensive second baseman than he has been, or better defensive anything than he has been. I mean, Ronnie Cedeno jumped the double play the other night, but Daniel Murphy fielded his perfectly. Too bad Ruben Tejada threw it away.
Right.
Murphy, I think, if he can get his average up and be where he was before, and that's the other reason you don't trade him now, because his average was at about 270, 280 now, where we know him, he can be a 320, 330 hitter. So to trade him now would defeat the purpose. I don't think that wouldn't be maximizing Murphy's value at this point.
Right, right. No, I'm totally in agreement there. And, you know, at the end of the day, you do have to kind of realize, you know, when the Mets were winning, everyone was happy, happy, joy, joy, and people were going to games, and Johansson kind of pitched a no-hitter, and Ari Dickey had two great outings in a row, and there was talk about him starting the All-Star game and having a Cy Young. Nobody was mentioning a word about the Wilpon finances. What we seem to forget is that Sandy Alderson has a shoestring budget that nobody is freaking talking about. So the fact is, you know, you can talk to your blue in the face about how much bullpen help they need, you know, how they should have traded Daniel Murphy when they had the chance, at how you say, you know, create a market for someone like a Scott Hairston, which is difficult. I mean, he's a liability in some ways, but he's been great for the Mets. It's easier to hold on to him. There are financial aspects that I think people aren't taking into consideration, that we have a very young, cheap, and under control team. So why mess with something when the plan has always been, you know, in future years to invest in the team when I guess more capital is getting freed up? You know,
you brought up I'm glad you brought that up, because I think people need to realize that the Wilpon situation hasn't totally gone away. That will always be there. And, like, it was swept under the rug when the Mets were 45 and 37, and they were over 500, and you're right. The whole glow of the no-hitter was still there, so nobody was talking about that. But that's still there. And you can get on Sandy Alderson all you want for not trading this guy, not trading that guy, and not being a buyer a month ago when they still could have used a guy like Brandon Lee. But that's all hindsight. If Sandy Alderson had made a trade a month ago when the Mets were still high in the standings and tied for that second wild card spot, you know that other teams were going to ask him for the world. The price was much higher than it would have been now. Look what the Dodgers gave up for Brandon Lee.
Yeah.
An A-ball outfielder and a double-A closer. The Mets could have made a deal like that if they were still in contention, and I think they would have. I absolutely think that they would have. But they weren't in contention, and I think Sandy did the right thing in waiting, because you know if the deal was made a month ago, the price would have been higher than what the Dodgers wound up paying.
Right, right.
Hey, what's happening?
Yeah. Well, this seems to be a recurring theme with some of our teams. But before I get into discussing our hockey loyalty, and your deadlines are for suckers anyway, I just have to say that, you know, the Mets probably did make out like bandits inadvertently for getting rid of some Mets killers in the NL East, such as Shane Victorino and Gabby Sanchez, sending them to the West. Why don't you know, give us some imparting words for our favorite Victorino, Shane Victorino?
That sanctimonious piece of garbage. I am so glad. You know, Brad Marchand writes for fucking Cracks. Put it better than I ever could have. He said in the last line of his post is farewell to Victorino. I hope there's a trade that sends him to YTT in the future, because he couldn't be farther away from the continental United States. I could not, and let me tell you something. I was at the Yankees game this afternoon, and I'm sitting there, and I always feel skeevy at Yankee games.
Uh-huh.
And you haven't lived until you've been at a Yankee game where the Yankees have been up by 10 runs, hoping that Omar Quintanilla and Andy Chavez can somehow make 10 runs, okay? That's not my idea. But the ticket was $5, but I digress. I could never hate any member of the Yankees, not even Nick Swisher, as much as I hate Shane Victorino. And maybe I could say the same thing for Hanley Ramirez. And
yeah,
with the two of them being on the Dodgers, you gotta conclude that the Dodgers are impossible to root for. When we're all looking for teams to root for in the playoffs to represent the National League, I can't root for the Dodgers. I don't think any self-respecting Mets fan can either.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that's gonna be rough, but who knows? That'll be the NL West has definitely shaped up. I mean, the Giants made their counter move in getting Hunter Pence. We'll see how that goes. But you are listening to the Gal for All Seasons podcast here on NDB Media Sports on Blog Talk Radio. As I mentioned earlier,
did you see Hunter Pence at the end of the game get out of the town car and high-five Lucille?
Yes, I did.
It was the most ridiculous thing you've ever seen in your life.
Yeah. Yeah, that was pretty sweet. But I guess we'll be seeing him tonight if you're gonna stay up for the West Coast game tonight. Let's switch gears here, and the trade theme seems to be prevalent in our teams. We went from one team that didn't do anything at the trade deadline to our other team that technically got their man. To give you guys a little background, Mastrodamus and I are not just Mets fans. We're also Jets and Rangers fans. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, we're approaching overlap territory. And most recently, Rangers general manager Glenn Sather got his man, or rather our man, in Rick Nash. Sather is being praised as having waited out the market, not overpaying, and replacing at least some of the production of our sniper, Marion Gaborik, who's going to be out for the start of the season. But do you think the Rangers are done making moves?
That's an interesting question, because the rumors, and it's all rumors and speculation, are saying that the next guy to come to the Rangers might be a guy named Joe Thornton.
Okay.
I doubt that would happen. If this was it for the Rangers, they've had a very good offseason. I would have liked to have seen them keep Brandon Price. And I think I said that on the last show. But to get Rick Nash, it basically means that the Rangers don't have to go through the regular season playing as if it's the playoffs.
Right.
They were playing 82 games like it was the playoffs, blocking shots, giving up their bodies, and you saw in the third round against the Devils how that wore them down.
Right.
Especially them being a team that was offensively challenged, so to speak. Rick Nash, I think, changes that. And not only can he score, but he's big and he's physical, so he can wear down some people in the process. even if it's by accident.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what the Rangers are going to learn in the next couple of years are what a team like the Red Wings learned back in the mid-90s, where the Red Wings were setting records for regular season wins. They had 62 wins, I believe, in the 95-96 season, and they couldn't get past the third round against the Avalanche. And
then the following
season, you saw, they went down to about 45 wins, but they were more prepared for the playoffs. Not just for the beginning of the playoffs, but they were prepared for four rounds of the playoffs.
I think
the Rangers getting Rick Nash will prepare them a little bit better for four rounds of the playoffs. They won't be as physically spent when they get to the third round as they were this year. So and the other thing with Nash, with that trade, if you had told me that they would have gotten Rick Nash without getting rid of any of their core prospects like Derek Stepan or Ryan McDonough or even JT Miller or Shane McColgan or guys that are scoring down in the minor leagues, I would have told you were not.
Right.
Absolutely right. And, you know, if you're a Ranger fan, you shouldn't have to apologize because Scott Housen is an idiot. And the Rangers were the beneficiaries of that. So you have to give Glenn Sather a lot of credit. A lot of credit for the deal that he made.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, the thing with the trade, if it would have happened during the season, they would have paid out their ass. You know, they would have had to give the sun and the moon. And I really do applaud Sather for sticking to his guns and not parting with, like, the Derek Stepans on the team that, you know, are really, I feel like they're part of the future. So that was very positive for me. So, yeah, I mean, I'm really looking forward to this upcoming season. You know, like you said, I hope that they don't burn out, and I hope, hopefully, I should say, hopefully, the loss of Marian Gaborik for the, you know, for his injury won't really hurt the team as much, and they can kind of, you know, welcome him with open arms when he returns. But, you know, I'm gonna let you go back to the event at Strawberries, because it sounds like you're having a good time there. But you know, I just
showing up now, and they're kind of looking at me and giving me the fisheye. Like they're not really going too live on the air, so I have a feeling they're cooking something up to try and get famous on the podcast. So the sooner we get off is probably the better for your sake.
Well, I just wanted to get your feelings, to tie up your feelings on the Jets camp. You know, there's just been, you know, so, I don't want to say, there's just like so much manufactured drama. There are the Tebow people and there are the Sanchez people and blah, blah, blah. And
yeah.
I know that you follow them pretty religiously, so have at it.
ESPN needs to learn that there are more than two teams in the NFL. And their coverage is just so intense on the Jets and the Broncos. And I should really embrace this as a Jets fan, because the Jets have been irrelevant for so many years in the realm of the NFL. And now it's all anybody's talking about. And you would think as a Jets fan I would be happy with this, but when there's so much focus on, oh my God, Mark Sanchez threw three picks in a scrimmage, or how does Tim Tebow look with his shirt off, I want to stick my head in the toilet and flush. Like, can you wake me when the season starts? Can you just wake me up then? It's just, it has gotten to ridiculous levels now. And even I had a big back and forth on Facebook about how Jerry Jones tweets the Giants saying, oh, we're going to go over there and beat their ass. So how does John Mara of the Giants respond? He tweets the Jets and said, oh, I'm not paying attention to the Cowboys. I'm watching Tim Tebow coverage. It's gotten so ridiculous, and everybody is eating this up. And I'm of the mind of, you know what, if you're not going to talk about anything important regarding football, then just shut it down, leave Jets camp. They turned down Fox Nuts for a reason. They don't need ESPN or SportsCenter hanging on their every word for 4 weeks of camp or 2 weeks of camp. Wake me when the season starts, and then we'll get at it then. Or even, wake me when the preseason games start. It's just gotten completely ridiculous now, and it's just on an absurd level.
Right. You know, I hear you, man. I don't even, like, really pay attention to the camp, except, you know, the random people that I follow on Twitter who, you know, are pretty apeshit about the Jets, but... yeah, I'm with you. Kind of wake me up when the games actually start, because, you know, right now it's just a bunch of speculation on, you know, what's going to happen if blah, blah, blah happens, and it's annoying.
Well, yeah, you even saw it with, I forget who it was, but basically asked, I think it was Hannah Storm that asked Mark Sanchez, well, when can Tebow take your job? How are you going to feel? I mean, when Tim Tebow takes your job, how is that gonna make you feel? And this is why I just turned the channel.
Right. Yep. Absolutely. I'm right there with you. All right, man. Why don't you tell the audience where they can find you? Twitter, blog, all the good stuff.
As always, www.metstradamus, M-E-T-S-T-R-A-D-A-M-U-S, blog, all1word.com. And you can find me on Twitter at Metstradamus. And a very special thank you to Strawberry Bar and Grill in Douglaston for allowing me to, basically for not kicking me out of the bar for doing a podcast right in the middle of the bar. And thank you to my three friends next to me, Richie, Joe, and Rob Figgers, for not giving me a hard time for being on the podcast with you while they are talking amongst themselves.
All right. Awesome. Well, thank you for taking time out of your night out with the guys, and enjoy your barbecue at Strawberry.
Absolutely, and thank you, Coop, for having me. As always, call me and email me anytime. I'll be back anytime.
All right. Great. Thanks.
Thank you, Coop.
And that was John Metrodamus Coppinger from the Great Metrodamus blog. And, you know, I'm going to wrap things up here, but a few notes from the Coop. I am working on getting a few good guests in the upcoming weeks, a few plugs. I was one of the esteemed guests on the great new podcast called Wait Till Next Year on Flawedcast, and you just look them up on Facebook, Wait Till Next Year. It's a Cubs and Mets fan. My friend Fred Solomon has started a podcast with his friend Nate, who is who's a Cubs fan. And it was really, really a lot of fun. I was also a guest on the Mets 360, also here on Blog Talk Radio, and their podcast with a good friend of my show, Brian Jorah. He's also from Mets360.com. So be sure to check out those sites and those shows. And I think I'm about out of time. I don't know about you Mets fans out there, but I've been seeing up to watch the West Coast games. It's always sort of bittersweet because I love the West Coast. I especially adore San Francisco. The timing didn't work, so I couldn't get out there this year. Such first world problems I have. But I'm watching the games at night. And I hope you are too. And I think you have it. You can find me at Coops22, COOPZ22 on Twitter. My website is galforallseasons.com. And I'm out of time. You're listening to the Gal for All Seasons podcast here on NZB Media Sports, Blog Talk Radio. I'm your hostess with the mostest, Tyrone the Coop Cooper, and peace out.